Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
Alrighty, hello everyone and welcome to the Dealmaker Show. So today we have an amazing guest joining us, you know, a guest that, he's done it a couple of times. You know, it's amazing the amount of times that he's done it because I was kind of like losing, you know, already the track, you know, of what he's done, which is remarkable. And on today's session, we're going to be talking about the way he has gone about building, financing, scaling, but then also even exiting, you know, his last company. And now he is really riding this incredible world of AI. And really interesting stuff. So we're going to be diving deep into that. But without further ado, let's welcome our guest today, Vikram Shekhawat. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on the show, Alejandro.
So originally born in the Punjab area there in India. So give us a walk through memory lane. How was life growing up for you?
Life was good. Life was fun. I was born into an army family. So my father used to get posted to a different location every 3 years. So I had the privilege of moving with him, sort of setting me up for a bunch of different things that a lot of people are not able to experience, which is, you know, moving into a new circle, adapt a new circle, build new relationships, figure out what works, what doesn't work. And you're trying to do all of that when you're a kid. So try and find focus in the middle of all the chaos around you. So started with that. I have had most of my schooling in army school. Then did my graduation as a BBA graduate, and then did my master's from one of the best colleges that India had to offer, which was Symbiosis.
But one thing there to point out in your childhood is that you were not really surrounded by a lot of ambitious people, which I think that delayed a bit the entrepreneurial, you know, kind of like drive kicking in. So tell us about this too.
Yeah, I think that's one of the most important things. If you want to become an entrepreneur, if that is something that you aspire to do, you should be starting pretty early. And I think I've started pretty late. I mean, I started my first company when I was about 20. I think I should have done it sooner than that. And one of the key reasons why I didn't do that early was because I was surrounded by people who wanted to have fun in life, which is typically how college kids or, you know, teenagers my age were. But if you look at the success stories of all the people who've made it extremely big, a lot of them had a significant hustle in the initial years. And that came because of the right kind of people in their circle. So you need to have people who are equally or more ambitious than you are. That sets the tone for you. And then it also helps you in forming the initial team that you need to build your business. I don't think individuals build great companies. It's a team that comes together. So if you have like-minded people, ambitious people who want to change the world tomorrow, and if you're surrounded by them, that's when you can make a real impact fairly quickly. And in my case, I think I didn't have that company initially. I got that company when I was doing my master's, and that's the reason why I built my first company when I was about 20.
So let's talk about that, you know, with your first company, Crusader. So how did this come about? Obviously, you know, you didn't have that drive yet, but what would you say push you to say, hey, you know what, I think I'm gonna test this venture thing, you know, out?
It came from a personal problem. I was very, very shy till about I graduated. And I had feelings for someone that I was not able to express. Crusader was a dating platform that connected people with mutual crushes. So my learning was that it's not just my issue. It would be an issue for most of the teenagers my age. And I wanted to create a platform that gives people anonymity when they're expressing their feelings for somebody. So Crusader was a platform where somebody who has, let's say, feelings for you can come on the platform and express their feelings anonymously by using the right set of tools. So not everyone is born Will Smith. So they wouldn't know what to say and how to say it. That's where Crusader would come and help them. Okay, this is how you can express your feelings. Some very good stats that we figured out that on an average, a guy has a crush on at least 7 females. And a female typically has a crush on 3 guys at least. So Crusader is a platform where you can come on the platform and express your feelings for somebody. And they get an anonymous message or an email that somebody feels this way for you. Come onto the platform, let us know who do you like. And if at all there was a match, we would connect with people. So this essentially eliminated 3 different fears for people. So fear of change in relationship dynamics, fear of embarrassment, and fear of you know, getting rejected in front of a lot of people.
So now with CrowdShader too, I mean, you didn't seem like very well prepared for meeting with investors, you know, at least at the beginning.
Yes, agreed. So we scaled this pretty fast. We got to about 600,000 users in about 6 months when internet was still becoming a thing back in India. Even if you go on the likes of Facebook right now, you would see some 40,000, 50,000 followers, and they're all organic. So when this kind of success comes to you at that early stage, that messes up your head. And you're getting a lot of attention. You're getting a lot of interest from all the people around you. And that's when we got significant interest from a bunch of different VCs back in India. When they're at least in my head thinking that I knew what I was doing, but the only plan that I had was how do I acquire more users? They wanted to figure out what the future plan looks like. I had zero understanding of that. First VC meeting, instead of killing it, I probably failed the attempt to even put a decent show out there. And solid learning, because then we saw in 2014, 2015, the likes of Bumble and Tinder coming on the block and becoming billion-dollar companies. We could have done that in 2009 when we were scaling too fast. But the lack of preparedness sort of resulted into us missing a couple of meetings. And then I was still in college, so didn't really pursue the idea a lot. The server cost used to be a big pain point at the time. So we ended up shelving the product for a while, thought that I'll probably reignite it someday. Didn't happen. Still, it remains in the shadows.
So then what happened after? You know, because B-School seemed to be the next thing, the next stop.
Yeah, so CrowdShader taught me a decent lesson that if you're meeting VCs, you need to be prepared with everything that you want to do, right from the kind of team that you would have to what the projections would eventually look like, what this idea caters to, how do you solve it better than everyone else in the market. And that's when we introduced bschool.co. It was a platform that provided holistic information on business schools across the globe. And the same set of investors that I had spoken to came in as angel investors in the business of bschool. And this scaled pretty fast. It was globally at local in nature, helping people take rational call in terms of which college they should pursue. And eventually, the traction that we were seeing caught someone's attention and the Blackboard team, and they reached out to us, and there was an acquisition that happened.
So, pretty amazing, you know, getting the company acquired. How was going through an acquisition?
Well, very, very good at the time, because if you're building a startup, it's a very meager or a very, small proportion salary that you take yourself, because you're the one who's putting in money, and the initial investment that you get from angel investors doesn't really support your salary per se. So I was surviving on something which is equivalent to about $100 a month. Back in the day in India, it was not too bad an amount, but fairly low from any standards or means. So coming out of that, doing that for about 8 months, taking care of your expenses, taking care of all the challenges that the lack of money brings to the table, and continuously putting in the right effort, that gets rewarded when you get acquired. So the first successful money that we made came from that acquisition. And that built a solid belief that, okay, I have it in me what it takes to be a reasonable entrepreneur, if not a fairly successful one yet. But I have it in me to actually pursue this path and go through challenges to get to a certain stage where somebody finds value in what you're doing.
So then in this case for you, I mean, right after B-School, instead of starting another business, you know, you did a little bit of corporate hopping from one to another. What do you think needed to happen for you to get comfortable again to go at it with Parishka? Because you were really dealing with a little bit more with the larger corporations versus, you know, the entrepreneurial world that is more your thing.
Yeah, so great question. I mean, initially I went on to working with the likes of Kotak Mahindra Bank and HDFC Bank and Times Internet, because my mentors had recommended that you need to get experience in the B2C space and also get an understanding of how these large machineries or enterprises operate. What kind of processes do they have? How do they ensure that different departments function seamlessly with each other? How do they bring in the scale across different geographies? How do they handle or understand different markets that they operate in? So that was a good learning piece that initially, gave me the inclination to work with these companies. It was instant growth in these companies that sort of got me a little excited and made me continue for about 5 years. So I was getting promotions very quickly. So I had about 3 promotions with Kotak Mahindra, a couple of promotions with HDFC. And then I was like, okay, I've had enough of banking already. Let me get back to the world of internet. And that's when I joined Times Internet Limited. I worked with these guys.
What was then the immediate step, you know, for Parishka? You know, what do you think was that triggering point for you to be like, I think I wanna do this again. I'm done with corporations.
For the same reason, I mean, beyond a point, large enterprises, they move very, very slowly. So you might have 10 different innovative ideas, but you can't put them to execution. You have to run it through a chain of command. And that slows down the enthusiasm that you would have if you would want to become an intrapreneur rather than an entrepreneur. So I saw that was happening and I wasn't liking it as much. And I was like, I am letting my skills go for waste in a place where they probably would not be rewarded as much. How about I go back to the block and do something like this for myself, where there is more purpose, more motivation, better stakes in the game, and build something that has a large level impact on the kind of target market that would want to cater. And that led to us eventually coming around with me and three of my co-founders building Pariksha.
Talk to us about how you met those co-founders and what was that moment leading to, all right, let's do this thing.
So I had already invested. So I was doing startup investments when I was working with HDFC and Times Limited. Pariksha initially was one of the companies that I'd invested in. And they were onto a different path initially. So they were trying to build a solution that was essentially focused on colleges and helping them prepare for campus placement. In 2018, we saw that we had a lot of customers, but they were not paying us. I mean, there were a lot of pending invoices, and we figured out the bureaucratic process that most of these large institutions have, that they would take the services, but they would not pay you on time. And these payments would get stuck for about a year or so. So we decided to pivot. And I was one of the initial investors in the company. And I was like, I can come in and help you with the sales skills that you need to identify how to go about reaching, let's say, customers directly rather than go through these institutions. Let's change the model a bit. And that's when we made a discovery of one of the exams that was happening in the state of Madhya Pradesh. There was close to about 1.1 million aspirants for one particular exam. And we thought that, okay, why is it that nobody's going after this market? And to our surprise, we figured out that this was a very local market. You cannot scale or build a business in this space if you're not feet on street, or if you're not really deep diving into each of these states individually. So we wanted to build a platform that was vernacular, so catered to these spaces in the language of their preference, go very local with the content. You can't scale that business by running ads on YouTube or by running ads on Google or Meta for that matter. So you had to have local partnerships being built. And I believe that my skills would add a lot of value in that space because I had significant exposure because of the previous experiences. So that's when I came in as a co-founder. And in 2018, along with the three of these guys, I had initially met them in a judging competition, but eventually decided to be co-founders. So came in and then we started scaling the business. Brought in our first 100,000 customers, then about 1 million customers, raised about $3 million in funding, eventually scaling the company to about 120 employees spread across 18 different states, 8 different languages. So it was growing pretty fast. So from 2018 to 2022, I was a part of Pariksha, building and scaling the company. And then in about 2022, I took an exit.
Hey guys, so pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, you know, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. You know, there's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard, and already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, you know, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors, or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, you know, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid-cap type of a cycle. So Again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com. And we would love to take a look at helping you out.
So let's talk about the exit too, you know, because obviously, you know, I believe that the transaction was rumored to be about $18 million. But obviously, you know, in this case, for you as a founder too, talk to us about timing, you know, about when is the right time to turn page as a founder?
So in my case, I wasn't very comfortable with the idea of acquisition. I mean, I wanted to build something, then to scale and make it extremely big. We were catering to about 6 million users at our peak. And I was like, we can make this platform something that's being used by a billion people. So that was my vision. That was my idea of how or where I would see it. But that idea was not something that sailed through all the other co-founders. And in my head, I was like, if you're not going to be creating that kind of impact, then the ship is best operated by the larger chunk of the shareholders who believe in a certain way or a certain approach, and then they can take it forward. I didn't want to be a roadblock. That eventually led to my exit, primarily because we had different visions for what this could become. But there was a lot of consolidation happening in the market, and I wouldn't really blame or, you know, say that my co-founders probably didn't see the vision. It's just that there was a lot of consolidation happening in the education space back in India at the time. And there were too many unicorns already built in the space. So probably what they felt was that getting acquired and then working under a larger umbrella would serve the purpose better. In my head, I thought that we could have been the guys who eventually acquired most of these guys. But there was a difference in the way we saw things.
So talk to us too about scale, because obviously with Pariska, you really understood the importance of the first 10 people that you bring in any organization. So why are the first 10, you know, folks that you bring in so important?
Great question again. So this is a learning that came in a little late. I mean, when you raise some money and all of a sudden you're seeing a lot of traction, you want to bring in the A team. And in your head, that A team is somebody that has good pedigree and a vintage of experience. So they should have about 10 to 12 years of experience in the space. And a good college backing them up. That's the mistake that we made as well initially. We obviously corrected that mistake. But what it does, it slows you down, because when you're bringing in somebody who has vintage, they move at their own pace. They probably might not have the same zeal. They will not be, they might or might not be people who are willing to unlearn, learn, unlearn, and relearn. And that's a journey that every, you know, at least the first 10 guys have to go through. The playbook is very different for each business that you've been a part of. So what I did in banking wasn't necessarily the thing that worked for us in the education space. Obviously, there are certain skills that can be transferred to any business, but the playbook is different for each business that you're becoming a part of. So it's very important for you to go through that journey. And when you bring in somebody with a good pedigree and vintage, they might not necessarily see it the same way. You want somebody who can operate at agility and speed very quickly. Because startups are meant to be that way. And you're expecting that if somebody has that pedigree, they'll be able to do that, which hardly happens. So you need people who are hungry. You need people who are willing to experiment, break barriers, or do things that have not been tried or tested before, and then come back and say, okay, this is something that worked. We should be scaling on it. Or this is something that didn't work. Let's iterate on it very, very quickly, which doesn't happen with the other set of guys. So the first 10 guys, I would say, are the make and break guys for you.
So obviously, you know, as you were saying, you know, time to turn page, and then something really exciting happened, which is you launching your latest baby, which is Model X. So talk to us about this, because there were like a sequence of events that needed to happen. You know, now you are in Canada, you know, move there. Now you're starting to like meet people. And how does everything lead to you starting this company?
So I moved my base to Canada in 2022. And this is immediately after the exit from Pariksha. So I moved my base, and initial idea was that I would probably try and build something of my own. And I saw that Canada has something which at least the Indian market at that time wasn't offering, which was ease of capital because of the proximity to the US. And I thought that I'll be able to sort of bring in my expertise and figure out a problem and solve that fairly quickly or faster than the others. So I initially thought of building a fintech idea, but that required open banking. So stalled it for a while. And then eventually, because open banking never came, the idea had to be scrapped. But while I was doing that, I was also helping startups that were a part of Invest Ottawa, Brampton Entrepreneur Center, and TBDC in Canada. And I was helping these guys figure out minimum viable product, product market fit, and go-to-market strategies based on my learning and my experience of different spaces. I was doing that and connecting them to potential investors as well if they got to a decent stage where it was looking nice. I was doing that, and while I was doing that, I connected with people who were building something else. So Jeremy, Pei, and Hanif, these guys were building a different solution at the time. Connected with these guys, and we figured out that I should be a part of the team and trying to build something together. Got onboarded in the month of Jan 2024. Initial idea that we were building was a bite-sized learning platform for enterprises. And in my head, because AI had changed the game significantly, this product was an extremely good product to have, but not a must product to have in the market. So then we decided to pivot. And we changed the offering from what it was to riding more on the way of AI. And that's where Modelex came in. So Modelex initially started as a platform that was the first multimodal generative AI platform. So you can have multimodal in on the input side, and on the output side as well, you could have any asset getting created in the format of your preference. It could be a video, audio, presentation, and so forth. So started with that and rolled out the first version of the product during Collision in Toronto. Had 150 different small and medium-sized businesses get onto the bandwagon very quickly. Saw the usage, saw that there was instant pull in the kind of thing that we had made. But over a period of the next a month or so, we figured out that the usage was slipping. And that's when we figured out the core problem, I would say. I mean, initial idea or initial perception was that people need one solution, people don't need 10 different solutions. Nobody wants to go through the learning curve, or nobody wants to go through 10 different platforms and retain context or have 10 different subscriptions. That was the initial problem that we were solving. But when we made this available to SMBs, and SMBs primarily because that was the connect that we had from the fintech that I was building. So I wanted to build a fintech solution for small and medium-sized businesses. And this, again, would have catered to a similar segment because that's underserved. So we gave it to these guys, and they, one, were not good at prompt writing. And second, they didn't know what all they can use the platform for. And the key problem behind that was most of the large language models or any platform that's out there, they don't have your persona. They can't tell you what you can use them for. So we solved that problem for the space. So we brought in a layer of business intelligence and a game changer, I would say. In the first 10 seconds of you joining the platform very quickly understands who you are, what your role is, what company you're a part of, and which industry do you operate in. And based on these parameters, we can then recommend, okay, these are the most likely challenges or goals that you have. And a platform like Modelex can then take care of the prompt engineering themselves and recommend things that you can do to overcome your challenges and achieve your goals. Rolled out this version to close to about 500 SMBs across different categories around immigration, realtors, healthcare professionals, NGOs, restaurants. And we saw significant adoption of AI. We were like, okay, these guys want to use something like this. They now know how to use these tools. And let's see now whether they'll be willing to pay for it. So the real test came at that time. And we decided monetizing it towards the end of December. And we decided to initially monetize one particular category, and we had 50% adoption in that category.
So how do you guys really make money? I mean, when you say monetize, what does that look like?
So it's a subscription-based platform. What we do is we try and make it extremely affordable and accessible to people. And the way it gets structured is you pay a minimum monthly fee onto the platform, and then you can create anything or any asset or use it to the full potential that the platform has to offer. And keep on adding more and more functionalities and more, keep making the platform more and more comprehensive from a user standpoint so that they don't have to go anywhere else. And the other thing that we're doing, which would be coming out by the end of this month, which we believe is a major turning point in the business for us, is introducing an agentic interface around. So we're introducing an agent called Agent Wick. So as a user, as a small and medium-sized business, we don't want you to go through any of the challenges that all the LLMs or agentic AIs or the world of AI has to offer. We want you to simply talk to it as if you're going to be talking to your co-founder, just the way we are having a conversation. We want you to talk to the agent, and the agent would take care of everything for you. So whether it is writing prompts, creating assets, doing research, brainstorming ideas, you have just one agent that you need to talk to. And then the agent takes care of everything else for you. So it's like having a very, very capable AI running mate with you who's equipped with the best that the world of AI has to offer and is making that available to you in real time.
That's amazing. So now, how have you guys two thought about, let's say, fundraising here? Because now you've had, you know, good success. You know, you're one of those founders that investors like to see and like to bet on because, you know, obviously that increases the odds of success. So how are you guys thinking too on the capital raising slide, being able to get the right people for the right reasons here?
Again, great question. So the way we see it, you need to have somebody who not only believes in the idea or who's willing to back the idea, you need somebody who acts as the extension of your business arm. So somebody who can connect you to potential clients in the space, you know, can give you the advantage of outreach, somebody that you can go and learn from so you can brainstorm ideas with them. And that's where I think there's a sizable fit that we've figured out in a bunch of different VCs who are now looking at investing in the company. So using them as sounding boards, using them as the extension of your business, and people bringing something beyond capital is what you need to look at. And whether you have somebody who believes in the idea the way you see it and is willing to back the team through difficult times, because no matter what you decide to do right now, there are pivots and there are changes that always are inevitable. I've not seen a business that has started with one idea and has scaled that idea extremely well without pivoting, you know, to a certain degree. So somebody who continues to, you know, believe and back the idea are the kind of investors that you should be bringing to the table. We're talking to a bunch of different large VCs here in Canada as well as US, and we have positive interest from them, and you should be hearing about a sizable round soon.
That's fantastic. So obviously, you know, all these people are bidding on a vision, right? The vision that not only them, but then also employees, customers, I mean, everyone is really rallying about that future will look like. So if you were to go to sleep tonight, Vikram, and you wake up in a world where the vision of Model X is fully realized, what does that world look like?
Okay, that's a good one. The way I see it, I mean, the current market that we're catering to is a very specific market. But I would want to see Model X becoming bigger than what we have right now. So at least 100 million small and medium-sized businesses getting impact or getting growth powered by Model X. But not just this. If you look at the world of AI today, we have a population of over 8 billion people worldwide. And what we've built is very similar to Jarvis from Iron Man, if you can call it that. So this has a utility for a lot of people, even if they're not small and medium-sized businesses. And the world of AI only has had less than 10% penetration. So you have about 700 million users today, and out of them, 315 are active AI users. And most of these guys are enterprise users. So if I have to envision where Model X would be, the way I would want to see it, I would want to have at least 100 million small and medium-sized businesses using it. And with the combined capabilities of Agent Wick, which is very similar to how I would say Jarvis from Iron Man is, I would want to see at least 5 billion people using Agent Wick on a day-to-day basis for anything that they need. I would want this to be making a significant impact to their lives on a daily basis.
So then we're talking about the future here, but I want to talk about the past and doing so with a lens of reflection. Imagine if I was to put you into a time machine and I bring you back in time to that time where you were, you know, let's say coming out of your master's degree and thinking about venturing into the world of entrepreneurship. If you had the opportunity of stopping that younger Vikram and giving that younger Vikram one piece of advice before launching a business, what would that be and why, given what you know now?
Great question. Okay. This would require some thought into it. So, like I said, you know, I started late. One of the reasons was the kind of fear that I had, but the biggest reason or the biggest thing that I will tell my younger self is don't be afraid of large players operating in the same space. you know, if you want to become the next big thing, and if there's someone else already operating, you have to focus on what your strengths are. If you leave a space or if you leave an opportunity just because you think that there's a bigger player or a bigger entity operating in the space, which is already dominating the market, then you'll probably pull back yourself. You want to believe in what you're doing will have a sizable impact and can change the future. You have to focus on your strengths and what difference you bring to the table. That'll actually get you there. And, you know, no player is large enough or big enough to be actually taken over. The problem with large enterprises, they move very slow. So as big as the ship becomes, it becomes very difficult to maneuver it in a certain direction. And the small companies or startups like our size have that as an innate advantage. You can pivot, you can move, you can make changes very swiftly, which is not a possible approach for large enterprises. So don't be afraid of large players operating in the same space. Go at it, give it your best shot and figure out what your strengths are and build on top of that.
So I love that, Vikram. So for the people that are listening that would love to reach out and say hi, what is the best way for them to do so?
Oh, I'm available to connect with people on LinkedIn, and I'm also fairly approachable on my email as well. My email is Vikram, V-I-K-R-A-M, at modalx.ai.
Amazing. Well, hey, well, Vikram, thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show. It has been an absolute honor to have you with us today.
Likewise. Thanks for having me on the show, Alejandro. Great talking to you.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers Podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening, and see you at the next episode.